Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The focus of the show today will be on the 9/11-based war in Syria. We, along with our European, Saudi, and Israeli allies, are arming, funding, supporting, and providing medical treatment to Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, ISIS in Syria, while also pretending to be fighting them. It's a proxy war to destroy Syria and eventually Iran. And here's a reminder that the war in Syria was planned probably prior to 9/11 and has nothing to do with freedom and democracy. General Wesley Clark will explain it to you here.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, no. He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, No. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
The corporate media, and even some of the so-called alternative media, are not telling the truth about what's going on in the Middle East and especially currently in Syria. The omissions, distortions, and outright lies by some are truly astounding. Here's what longtime Middle Eastern journalist John Pilger has to say about the media and Syria. And the clip you're about to hear is from RT called "Going Underground." And the host is Afshin Ratanzi. And here he is with John Pilger.
What was your reaction when you first heard of the Anglo-American-French missile attacks on Syria?
It's built on a series of, I would call them, lies, fabrications.
The chemical attack on Douma, Theresa May clearly said, this is why Britain has to go in and fire.
I don't think anything Theresa May says is to be believed, frankly. She's yet to convince us that she has a right to be believed, because almost everything to do with foreign policy has shown to, in the end, if you take the Salisbury attack, that is unraveling so fast. For example, the OPCW report on this, which is not reported, include a laboratory report from its major laboratory in Switzerland, which said this wasn't a nerve agent, this wasn't Novichok, it was something entirely different.
You're talking about the Wiltshire attack.
We're talking about the Wiltshire side, the Salisbury attack, but they are connected because it leads then to the attack on Syria. There is overall a campaign against Russia. This is a very long campaign. It's been going on since the Russian Revolution, but it's intensified in terms of its propaganda in a way I've never known. I've never known journalism to be so distorted in order to serve this propaganda. I mean, the attack on Douma was based on when I called it a lie, when you look at the available evidence, the real evidence, the evidence that barely sees the light of day, then there's no justification for it whatsoever. There's no real evidence of a chemical attack. So what we're seeing is the most intense campaign of propaganda, at least since the Iraq, the build-up to the Iraq war in 2003. It comes from a great tradition. It comes from 1945, the cover story for dropping two atomic bombs, later discredited, right through to the beginning of the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin. So we had years of misery and devastation in Vietnam built on a lie. When are we going to understand this? When are we going to understand there's an historical pattern? And we're seeing that played out now almost through the propaganda that's presented as news.
I think one could argue that many mainstream media journalists have short-term memories, perhaps, but they are handed, as they have always been handed, press releases from government that routinely say Russia has obviously invaded an area of Europe, and now they're being told we have proof that they have launched a chemical attack on English soil, first time since World War II. And the journalists say our governments cannot possibly be lying about such a serious event.
I've been a journalist for a long time. I've covered many wars. I've covered the First Cold War. I've covered it from the Soviet Union. I've covered it from the United States. I've worked all over the world. I'm a reporter. I would say there is a pseudo-journalism now. The kind of journalism you described, I wouldn't describe as journalism. To simply write down and swallow what governments tell you is the very antithesis of what real journalism is. Fortunately, we still have it in the great honorable exceptions, the mavericks, like Robert Fisk, whose single report from Duma showed almost without doubt the whole thing was a farce. He interviewed a doctor who'd worked at this particular facility. There was no evidence. The doctor made a mockery of Macron's and May's and claims. We have Seymour Hersh now, who can't be published in his own country. He has to be published in Germany, probably the greatest investigative reporter in the world. Hersh, last year, made his own reporting, his own investigation, made mockery of these so-called chemical attacks. I've never known a time when so-called, as you describe it, mainstream, surely a satirical term, mainstream journalism has been so integrated into a propaganda barrage. And that propaganda campaign, at the moment pointed right against Russia, suggests to me that it's the beginning of a kind of another march on Russia, that the surrounding of Russia with bases, with American bases, with NATO missiles, the provocations day after day suggest this. In Syria, where basically the Russians and the Syrians have succeeded, they've won. The rebels, most of whom are jihadists and extreme Islamicists, supported by the United States, supported by Britain, are still presented as a credible opposition within Syria. But the whole point of this is to take Syria from the Russians since the 1950s. If you read the documents, you go back and read the declassified MI6 dispatches from Syria. They've been trying to do this since the 1950s. Syria hasn't been controlled in the same way that Iran hasn't been controlled. I hope this is not the last stage. I don't think it is, because in Syria, it appears there's a major defeat. And what we're seeing is a reaction to that.
And here's what Canadian investigative journalist Ava Bartlett, who's been on the ground in Syria, has to say about corporate media coverage of the situation in Syria. She's responding to a question by an American reporter.
When you talk about the Syrian people and what the Syrian people want, how can you quantify that? Do you have any independent surveys where you can actually document that? And secondly, you talk about the corporate media, the Western media, the lies, and all of this. Could you explain what you think might be the agenda from us in the Western media, and why we should lie, why the international organizations on the ground should lie, why we shouldn't believe all these absolutely documentable facts that we see from the ground, these hospitals being bombed, these civilians who are talking about the atrocities that they have been experiencing? How can you justify calling all of us liars?
Sure. I mean, there are certainly honest journalists amongst the very compromised establishment media. Let's start with your second question. So, international organizations on the ground. Tell me which ones are on the ground in Eastern Aleppo. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you. There are none. There are none. These organizations are relying on the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is based in Coventry, UK, and which is one man. They're relying on compromised groups like the White Helmets, which let's talk about the White Helmets. The White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They have been funded to the tune of $100 million by the US, UK, and Europe, and other states. They purport to be rescuing civilians in Eastern Aleppo and Idlib, yet no one in Eastern Aleppo has heard of them. And I say no one, bearing in mind that now 95% of these areas of Eastern Aleppo are liberated. The White Helmets purport to be neutral, yet they can be found carrying guns and standing on the dead bodies of Syrian soldiers. And their video footage actually contains children that have been recycled in different reports. So you can find a girl named Aya who turns up in a report in month, say, August, and she turns up in the next month in two different locations. So they are not credible. The SOHR is not credible. Unnamed activists are not credible. Once or twice, maybe, but every time, not credible. So your sources on the ground, you don't have them. As for your agenda, not your, but the agenda of some corporate media, it is the agenda of regime change. How can the New York Times, I was reading it this morning, or how can Democracy Now!, which I was reading the other day, maintain until this day that this is a civil war in Syria? How can they maintain until this day that the protests were unarmed and nonviolent until, say, 2012? That is absolutely not true. How can they maintain that the Syrian government is attacking civilians in Aleppo when every person that's coming out of these areas occupied by terrorists is saying the opposite? How do I quantify the support of the Syrian people? The elections. In 2014, the Syrian people held elections. The point being, overwhelmingly, the people support President Assad. There are people that want change in the government. We're not pretending they don't want change. Everybody wants change. But in terms of support of the government, the point is they don't see President Assad as the problem. They see the problem as terrorism. They see elements of problems in the system that they have there, but President Assad, they don't see as the problem. They actually overwhelmingly support him. So I'm basing it on their choice in their leader, and I'm basing it on my interactions with people in Syria.
And now we're going to hear from Ben Swan from the show Truth in Media. And this video is called Who's Funding the White Helmets? And here he is, Ben Swan.
As the U.S. moves closer toward all-out war with Syria, a lot of what our government seems to base its intelligence on, especially claims of chemical weapon use by the Syrian government, is an impartial humanitarian group called the White Helmets. You've no doubt heard of the White Helmets. They've been praised in the media as heroes and have reportedly saved more than 100,000 lives as of April of this year. But who are the White Helmets really? Are they a legitimate organization, or are they pawns funded for the purpose of regime change? Let's give it a reality check you won't get anywhere else. Despite a recent U.S. funding freeze for humanitarian aid for Syria, the U.S. continues to fund the controversial group known as the White Helmets. Take a look.
Stabilization funding is under review at this time. We recognize and appreciate and are very grateful for all the work that the White Helmets continues to do on behalf of the people of their country and on behalf of the U.S. government and all the coalition forces. They're doing incredible work in rescuing, in some cases, in other cases it's recovery efforts. They're an incredible group of individuals.
Now, the White Helmets claim to be a neutral entity in Syria. They say they're just helping people caught in the middle of a civil war. But are they? Follow the money, and you're going to find numerous ties to government funding from not only the U.S., but the U.K., the Netherlands, Denmark, and Germany. And here's the thing, untangling these ties to the White Helmets, it gets pretty complicated. So stay with me. Here we go. According to their website, the Syria Civil Defense, nicknamed the White Helmets, actually formed in late 2012 to early 2013 as self-organized groups. Realizing they needed training, 20 Syrians went to Turkey back in March of 2013 to learn from a former British Army officer named James Lemessurier. Now, Lemessurier, he has ties to the failed NATO intervention in Kosovo. He developed a training program for Syrians. It included trauma care, command and control, and crisis management courses. He is specifically credited for helping form the White Helmet's structure and the White Helmet's operations. Lemessurier was able to fund the training for the program, though, through Mayday Rescue, his Netherlands-based nonprofit funded by grants from the Dutch, the British, the Danish, and the German governments. Now, this brings us to December of 2013, when the UK-based PR machine backing the White Helmets was first established. It's called the Voices Project, set up as a private limited company for public relations and communications activities. Part of the Voices Project's articles of incorporation state that the organization seeks to influence public opinion and influence governmental and other bodies and institutions regarding reform, legislation, and regulation. So who set up the Voices Project? Well, the first listed director on the Articles of Incorporation is Jeremy Hymans, the co-founder and the CEO of the global PR platform Purpose, and a co-founder of the controversial online activist network Avaaz. Though Hymans stepped down from his position with the Voices Project in 2015, his connection to the project is worth noting. And here's why. In February of 2014, New York-based Purpose listed a job posting for interns to help, quote, launch a new movement for Syria, end quote. By March of 2014, the Voices Project set up the Syria Campaign NGO, which they describe as a human rights organization that supports Syria's heroes in their struggle for freedom and democracy. Now, this coinciding with the graduates of the Mayday Rescue training establishing a new team in Syria. 6 months later, in October of 2014, a conference of these teams actually came together to establish the Syrian Civil Defense as an official national organization. They became known, as we know them today, as the White Helmets, thanks to the Syria campaign. According to their website, the White Helmets have been directly funded by Mayday Rescue and a company called Chemonix since 2014. Yet there's evidence that both of those organizations started supporting the White Helmets back in early 2013, right around the time that the White Helmets claim to have formed as self-organized groups. Mayday Rescue, as we said, is funded by the Dutch, the British, the Danish, and the German governments, and Chemonix. They're a Washington, D.C.-based contractor that was awarded $128.5 million in January of 2013 to support a peaceful transition to a democratic and stable Syria as part of USAID's Syria Regional Program. At least $32 million has been given directly to the White Helmets as of February of this year. The firm has been funded by USAID for years, and it carries a record of failures in supporting so-called humanitarian interventions, including, by the way, the one in Libya. So what you need to know here is that, first of all, this was only part one of our look at the White Helmets. There are even more dots to connect here, including the relationship between USAID, Chemonix, Jeremy Hyman, and Avaaz. We're going to make those connections in another episode of Reality Check. But for today, let's make this clear. There are very real questions about the authenticity of the voice of the White Helmets as representative of the Syrian people. It's also clear that the White Helmets have ties to organizations that are being funded by governments that have been and right now continue to seek to overthrow the Assad government and to establish a new regime in Syria. And yet our media and our government act as if the information coming from the White Helmets is actually coming from an impartial observer. It is not. In fact, it appears to actually be coming from an organization that is being funded with an agenda to see the Syrian government overthrown. That's Reality Check.
And now here's how one Syrian girl sees the situation. She calls herself Syrian Girl, and here she is.
Hi everyone, this is Syrian Girl. Syria has been attacked by the US-Israeli-French alliance. Missiles struck the T4 military base, a base that is crucial to the fight against ISIS. This comes right after a false flag chemical attack in the suburb of Douma in Ghouta, Damascus. The neocons are blaming the Syrian government for the chemical attack. But once again, there is no motive because Assad was winning. After 7 years of war, Ghouta is almost completely liberated from al-Qaeda-linked rebels. Thousands of civilians have evacuated the city. For years, the rebels weren't allowing them to leave because they were using them as human shields. Most rebel groups in Ghouta surrendered, but one rebel group called the Army of Islam, which controls Douma, refused. This is because they believed they had leverage in the form of civilian hostages that they kidnapped from a nearby pro-Assad Alawite town called Adra.
They were taken by Sunni rebels last August.
The Army of Islam, one of the groups the US listed as moderate, kidnapped men, women and children. They put them in cages and paraded them around the city of Douma, saying that if Assad bombs the rebels, the hostages would die. They were literally using them as human shields. A few weeks ago, they released footage of these hostages walking through an underground tunnel in Douma, injured and distressed. Since these civilians were from a pro-Assad Alawite town, the rebels thought that they had more value as human shields than the civilians of Douma. But the war continued, and it looked like the Army of Islam were about to surrender. But suddenly, they stalled negotiations and rained hundreds of missiles down on Damascus city center. You see, some of their members didn't want to surrender. This was when the false flag chemical attack happened. It's obvious the people, the children that were killed in the gas attack, were the hostages that the rebels had kidnapped. Footage of four children suffocated in an underground bunker emerged. A wood-burning oven right behind them was producing carbon monoxide. The rebels also released footage of perfectly healthy kids being drugged and hosed down. Some of the hostages have been rescued. Among them is Judy. She was abducted 4 years ago when she was only 8 months old. How many children just like her didn't make it and were gassed by the rebels in a false flag attack? And just look at the timing. A week prior to this attack, Trump said he would pull troops out of Syria. Now he's saying he's going to attack Assad. It's the exact repeat of last year's scenario. The chemical attack that occurred in Idlib on the 4th of April in 2017 occurred almost a year to the day of this attack. And a week prior to that attack, the US said regime change was no longer the objective in Syria. And afterwards, Trump attacked Syria. Also, a day prior to the chemical attack, Israeli President Netanyahu called Trump and told him that he wasn't allowed to pull out of Syria. It's obvious who benefits. It's not the US soldiers that recently died in North Syria. This chemical attack is the excuse that Israel and the neocons need to keep the US troops in Syria indefinitely and have a casus belli for World War III.
So you've heard today from several voices that you will rarely, if ever, hear in the corporate media and some so-called alternative media. You can decide where the truth lies when it comes to 9/11 and the 9/11 wars. But remember, they lied to us about Vietnam. They lied to us about Iraq having WMDs. They've lied to us about the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations. Do you really think they're telling us the truth about 9/11 or about the wars and now Syria? Do you really think we're getting the truth there from the corporate media and the government? And I would encourage you to look up Operation Mockingbird if you still think you're being told the truth by the corporate media. And get ready for more war, because Iran has just announced that it has banned the use of the U.S. dollar in all trade transactions, prohibiting businesses from registering import orders using the currency. This was announced on Wednesday of last week following an official request by the Central Bank of Iran. It's meant to address fluctuations in the dollar. But Western bankers want full-spectrum dominance economically, and we're probably not all that happy with Iran's decision to ban the dollar. So last week, Manhattan District Judge George Daniels made a default ruling, and a default ruling is one that is issued in the absence of a defendant, that found Tehran liable for the deaths and ordered its entities to pay over $6 billion in compensations to the families of more than 1,000 victims of the September 11th attacks. So now Iran is being blamed for the September 11th attacks. Of course, they provide no evidence about how they were involved. And I have to say, having studied 9/11 for 16 years now, I have seen no evidence linking 9/11 to Iran at all. But when you have an agenda like full-spectrum dominance, and like what General Wesley Clark informed us about, the 7 countries in 5 years, evidence doesn't seem to matter. It certainly didn't concerning 9/11 either, even though there's a whole body of scientific evidence that proves that what the government and corporate media have told us about it can't possibly be true. So I'm going to end the show today with a song called 9/11's a Lie by the Freebies, and it's sung to the tune of Stayin' Alive. So here it is, 9/11's a Lie.
This is from the old school, new school.